And I'm pleased to say, John, you are here, my friend. I'm just so joyful to have you on the air with me, my friend, John. Go for it.
I tried 3 or 4 numbers. I finally got through. I want to know how you can talk like that for half an hour without breathing.
That's what they asked. Doesn't he have time to take a deep breath? John, I'm very keen on having your assessment of how things stand, not only right here in the USA, but worldwide, including Russia, Ukraine, the whole bit, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset. Just go for it, my friend.
I have a different way of dividing the Congress rather than Democrats or Republicans. I like to divide the Congress in this way, and I want you to tabulate the vote total for me. Divide the Congress by who in the Congress still believes that Arab terrorists caused the problem on 9/11. That's great,
John. I love it. Yeah, we're fed so much bullshit. JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, and more. You make a devastating point. And of course, go ahead.
I saw a great one just the other day. Mike King of the Great Tomato Bubble, who's now Real History, had a great story yesterday about William McKinley and his vice president, whose name I think was Hobart. Hobart died of somewhat natural causes, a heart attack, I think. And they named Theodore Roosevelt the vice president. They appointed Theodore Roosevelt the vice president in the same way they appointed Nelson Rockefeller once upon a time. And of course, after McKinley's assassination, Theodore Roosevelt became president and then complicated the following election as well. But it reminded me, Theodore Roosevelt reminded me of having the same track record as Barack Obama, of somebody who was appointed, shoehorned through by rich Jews, and manipulated all the way to the presidency. And this is the same way Barack Obama came around. And it's like our history books certainly don't reflect that. But we have, as my former partner Mike Gatti would tell us, we've had a Jewish problem since Alexander Hamilton, and we haven't really had the free republic that we've been told we had. And we certainly don't have it now. So I don't know what this grandstanding is about Kevin McCarthy, but as evidenced by my opinion of the way you should split the real factions in the Congress now, we only have one party. And it really doesn't matter which one of these shills is in charge, with the possible exception of Thomas Massie, who is like the new Ron Paul now, of the person who votes against the other 434 members. So, it's like... I know you feel the same way. It's a totally frustrating thing where we don't have a representative government. We haven't had one in our lifetimes, and maybe we've never had one because the government is owned by the people who have the money. And the people who have the money are the Federal Reserve, who are the Jews who create the money. And we've invented all this money now, which practically means nothing. We're being deserted by the entire world. From Saudi Arabia on down, we're being abandoned justifiably because we are the perpetrators of evil in the world. And you put a footnote on that a major reason, not a complete reason, but a major reason that we are in that position is because we're not controlled by Americans. And it looks like we never have been, going back to the Continental Congress, where we were controlled by England. England got everything they wanted. And it's like Americans had never run their own country, which is why all these rich people have come in, commandeered everything, eaten up all the land. They're eating up more of it now. And we don't have a representative government. And there's only one solution to that. And that is something that we're all afraid to hear, which is we need to throw these guys out physically.
Well, John, I have a lot of audience members who are going to agree 100%. The only exception I would make is that Trump, I think, upset the apple cart and antagonized establishmentarians on both sides by executing a hostile takeover of the Republican Party and turning it into a populist party, really something unprecedented. As a consequence, when he came to office, really wanting to, I actually, in his phrase, believe it, make America great again, he was opposed even by appointees in his own administration, even by his chief of staff. Melania's recently acknowledged, or shall we say her press secretary has reported, her disillusionment with Mark Meadows, for example. But even William Barr, Bill Barr, who for a time I thought was a good guy, stabbed Trump in the back, claiming there was no evidence of election fraud, for example, when he hadn't even bothered to investigate. Trump, of course, made us energy independent. He closed the borders. He made us a robust economy. The lowest earning wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the highest rate. We had before the midterm a massive shift to the right because of Trump. Hispanics were moving right. Catholics were moving right. John, even white suburban women who represent 20% of the electorate were moving to the right. And they were reporting they liked Trump better than they did Biden, which in my opinion is not a tough choice. I think if it were not for the manufacture of these elections, the Dominion machines and fudging on the voter registration rolls and sending out massive ballots to the wrong address and then getting them back in order to submit them in order to benefit the Democrat candidate, where, you know, in Maricopa County, I don't think the world has ever seen such a grotesque sham election. And when you have the courts not willing to straighten out, that's when we're in deep doo-doo, no doubt whatsoever. But I do count Trump as an exception. Otherwise, of course, I think you're making impeccable points that there's an awful lot of commonality between the political elite on both the right and the left.
We can't get right without recognizing the true perpetrators of 9/11. And it's crystal clear when you see Israeli lovers in every step of the process that took place, from the planning to the planning of the explosives to the sending the five Jews to observe the activities the day before 9/11 or the days before 9/11, the deployment of FEMA before the actual act, the numerous mistakes by the media of saying Tower 6 fell 20 minutes before it actually did. There's so many things, and we have been hung up lately in a kerfuffle, you might call it, about the planes, no planes argument. And that is like a total distraction. I mean, everybody is so fired up about enforcing their view of the technical aspects of what we saw on television and in person, totally missing the point. Everybody's really eager to do that, arguing ad infinitum about the trivialities of all the details. And nobody is willing to start talking about Frank Lowy and Larry Silverstein and Philip Zelikow and Michael Chertoff and all of these guys. Actually, you began the show very well with describing the Zionist supermajority and all the people who were involved in all the decisions. And this has been going on throughout the Republic, throughout the entire history of the Republic. And it's like, we don't get that message because they own the media. And I sent around the other day a little retrospective of my early stories from 20 years ago, which you responded to. And we haven't had an honest republic all through. All the events have been spun, and they're still being spun. So there's no hope of us solving the problem under conventional means, where it's like you can't replace a few congressmen and change the direction of the country as long as the 13 Jewish families on the Federal Reserve. Forget about it. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing has happened, except the taxes get larger. The invasions get more frequent, and the greatest shame for me to be an American today is that the general run of Americans has been so miseducated and are so stupid that they would support the Ukraine when they knew full well that we went in there and arranged a revolution 8 years ago and started pouring in all the crimes we could think of, supported by all the politicians we could think of in the Ukraine as a direct aim at Russia. And now the media is up in arms about Russia trying to defend itself. And I'm not trying to defend Russia, but I'm just trying to defend any country that's been invaded by the United States. How can people go to work every day and know that their country has it deliberately invaded all of these countries on the basis of lies and still think of themselves as good people? They're not good people. Americans are not good people. They're accessories to mass murder every day, constantly. And because they've done that for so long, now the guns are aimed at themselves. And we've got millions of people dead, including that defensive back on Monday night, who dropped dead in his tracks. And the Jewish media is trying to spin it as, oh, he had a heart attack. Oh, it was a hard hit. Oh, he's dead. He was dead 10 seconds after he fell. And they've got him in the hospital. They got his blood flowing, but his brain isn't doing anything, and it never will. So we are being deceived. And this Buffalo Bills defensive back is a harbinger of the future of all of us, where we are going to be, we're in the process of being exterminated, and they're going to lie about what's really happening to us. That's where we're at, and you know that. You've described that many times yourself.
Well, John, John Stockton, the brilliant NBA point guard, has pointed out that hundreds, actually thousands of athletes have just dropped dead. Now, these are individuals who are physically in the prime of their life. This has never happened before. It's absolutely unprecedented. And I think this event, because it was in a nationally broadcast playoff game, is having a major impact. A lot of people are pondering what the hell is going on. Where I checked, and the owner of the Bills had mandated that all of his players had to have the vax. So I'm with you 100% on that score. I also agree that the two most prominent, at least the most widely noted in the press, 9/11 movements, namely Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and Judy Wood and her dues group, both disavow discussing who is responsible and why, claiming that we have to know how it was done before we can do that, as though we couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. It's only scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I founded in 2005, that have pointed out the Israeli role here, where Bibi Netanyahu and Ehud Olmert appear to have been the brain trust behind 9/11 back in the 1980s to envision a way to draw American military forces into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. Thus, my second book on this subject, America Nuked on 9/11, Compliments of the CIA, the Neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad, nails down exactly the role of Larry Silverstein, the Port Authority. These are all prominent Zionists transferring to private property just 6 weeks before, where Silverstein fired the security firm that had looked after the tower since it was first opened in 1970, hired an Israeli firm to provide security, renegotiated insurance coverage. So he had an anti-terrorist clause. And then when there are ostensibly two planes, he claimed two attacks, double indemnity, pocketed $4.5 billion on a $114 million investment. Now, where I disagree is on the no planes issue. Two of those planes, John, 11 North Tower and 77 Pentagon, were not even in the air that day. And the other two, 93 Shanksville and 175 South Tower, were still in the air after they'd allegedly crashed in Shanksville or hit the South Tower. Pilots for 9/11 Truth tracked them and discovered that Flight 93 was over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, after it had ostensibly crashed in Shanksville, and that Flight 175 was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, after it had officially hit the South Tower, where I tracked down FAA registration records showing the planes, the actual physical airplanes used for those two flights, were not even deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? I think those are devastating critiques, John. And I did an interview with General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, who had been in charge of all U.S. military signals, including photographic intelligence, about all the proof I had about the four different crash sites having been fabricated and faked. And General Stubblebine not only agreed with me, but offered additional reasons why I was right. So I believe there's actually there the opportunity to do a devastating demolition job on the official narratives. Pilots established that the from the video of Flight 175 approaching the South Tower, that was traveling too fast to be structurally possible. In other words, that plane would have come physically apart in the air. Then you have the impossible entry because there are no collision effects between this Boeing 767 and a massive 500,000-ton steel and concrete building, where if you count the number of frames, and we've done it in different videos, the Hazard Connie and the Evan Fairbanks, which is looking straight upward, the plane passes its entire length into this massive building in the same number of frames it passes its entire length in air, which makes sense only if the 500,000-ton steel and concrete building provides no more resistance to the trajectory of an aircraft in flight than air, which is obviously right. Absurd on its face. And we have all kinds of confirmation. For example, there's no debris beneath the facades that were allegedly penetrated by these planes. No bodies, no seats, no luggage, no tail, no wings. And an engine that was found at Church and Murray was a planted engine. It was inadequated, not then in current use. It was sitting on the sidewalk, which was undamaged, beneath a steel scaffolding and a canopy. I mean, they've gone out of their way to fake all this happy horseshit, John, and you're absolutely right. The media won't touch it, but the evidence, the truth is out there.
Jim, we've been through all this the past couple of weeks ad nauseum with this so-called debate we've had. I have to note, though, they couldn't find any. It's like we weren't allowed to look for any aircraft debris, but they did find the two black boxes. That was real convincing, about as convincing as Suquamish passport. So we've been through all this the past couple of weeks. The people who are arguing the government's point of view are not going to quit. I hope they're being paid very well. But what I wanted to get with you in the conversation about that everybody should hear is the Rich Hall hypothesis, what it was, how it's feasible, and why did he quit the debate? Was he forced to recant?
Well, what John's talking about here is Richard Hall from the UK did brilliant work on Flight 175 and advanced the hypothesis that of the three alternative explanations, CGI, video compositing, and the projection of a hologram, that the hologram hypothesis was superior in its explanatory power, with which I agree 100%. He actually had taken, there were 52 videos of that flight, about 27 or 28 were sufficiently precise that he could plot the location of the plane at different times as it was approaching the building. And what he discerned was that it's performing impossible acts, therefore it cannot be real. The question becomes, how was it done? He found a similar set of plots from NIST, which claimed to be based on radar data. He checked the source, and it appeared to be authentic, but he did find other radar data, military radar data, and it showed a plane approaching the building, the second tower, the South Tower, but it was 1,200 feet to the right. It appears the radar didn't show the image that he had plotted because the image was only that. It wouldn't reflect radio waves because it wasn't a solid object, but the actual plane projecting the image was captured on the radar and corresponded, which not only explains the impossible speed, but it explains the impossible entry and why we had this bizarre nose-out phenomenon. Those who were watching on 9/11 know all of a sudden the network fade to black because the nose out of the plane was coming through on the opposite side by failure of a hand-eye coordination problem. I have done massive investigation on this. I've even been sent an Australian military manual for an airborne holographic projector. and they have precisely this kind of sophisticated technique. And we all know, of course, military technology is decades ahead of what the public is allowed to know. It turns out there's a method for projecting holograms using air molecules as a transient screen, which appears to be how it was done on 9/11. Now, Richard Hall, for reasons I have no comprehension, has now disavowed his theory. But Jim Fetzer asserted, make it not then the Richard Hall's account of what happened, but Jim Fetzer's account of what happened, because I guarantee you that is how it was done. And John, yeah, you're alluding to a discussion thread in which you and I have been participating, where there are numerous shills and trolls who are trying to defend the official account of the government. But, you know, it's embarrassing. They're making such fools of themselves. Your thoughts?
Well, my denominator of this whole subject, this whole aspect of the 9/11 dilemma, is that it's essentially irrelevant, because the planes had nothing to do with the collapse of the building. The building was brought down by explosives that everybody heard, and the Empire State Building from 1947 shows us that a plane can crash into a building and the building won't fall. Now, maybe the numerator of that fraction is that this is the only time in history, in engineering history, where a steel and glass skyscraper has collapsed due to fire. And on this day, there were at least two of them. There were at least three of them. And then, of course, there's a whole building seven question. So this brouhaha is gonna stay where it is. It's gonna continue to be a distraction from the main question of who did it, that everyone seems to be afraid to focus on. And so I would like to leave this and go to a couple of other questions that I have about you.
The timing is perfect, John, because we're just about to hit the break. So we'll pick up with those new questions when we return from the break. And I'm so delighted to have you here, my friend. I'm just ecstatic.
I'm so delighted to be partaking of basking in your reflected glory. How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful, John. I'll take it. Here we are at the break. Right back with John Kaminsky. Stand by. Well, I'm just delighted to have John Kaminsky here, and he indicated just before the break he had other issues he'd like us to address. So, John, the floor is yours.
Well, you have rubbed shoulders with some of the great patriots of recent history in America, and I want to know what happened to a couple of them. I'm speaking specifically of Wolfgang Halbig and James Tracy, who were staunch investigators of the Sandy Hook hoax, and have disappeared from public view, and apparently, after sustaining great injuries in a vocational sense to themselves, what happened to them, and what's their status today?
I wish I could give you a real positive report. Tracy was smeared and lambasted at Florida Atlantic University, principally for posting about Sandy Hook, especially a brilliant critique of the press conference held by the medical examiner Wayne Carver. That right. was incoherent, inconsistent, made no sense, or even said he hoped this didn't come crashing down on the good people at Newtown, which made no sense whatsoever if it were authentic.
It made sense to me, Jim.
It made sense to you, yeah, if you understood that it was a hoax and it did involve the whole community. This is what Sophia Smallstorn called a capstone event, where FEMA yep. comes in and they give the community big bucks. They plan it all well in advance. They even have auditions for roles. They have a script. And then the community all signs non-disclosure, you know, agreements that they're not going to blow the whistle. Some of which, by the way, have just expired at the end of the year. And we do not know whether anyone's going to take exception and be willing to speak out. But Tracy was railroaded. They got him for not signing a form about his outside activities. So here you had a tenured professor who was booted from his position for not signing a form at 35 years of higher education at many institutions of higher learning, Kentucky, Virginia twice, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Cincinnati, New College, University of South Florida, University of Minnesota, Duluth campus. I never heard of such a thing. It's just outrageous, totally trumped up. He was sacked from his position. He has a large family, has five kids. And my impression now is that he is the at-home dad who's looking after the family, that his wife is keeping them afloat financially. But it's a gross abuse of justice. And really, frankly, I find it abhorrent in every possible way. And it was a Jewish community. It was a Jewish community in South Florida that put pressure, led by. Go ahead.
Well, let me interrupt with this. I just wanted to describe the shadow of this event. It speaks very poorly of the educational situation in the United States, where all colleges and universities are participating in the same scam that the mainstream media are participating in, which is not to mention anything opposed to the Jewish financiers who are keeping them all in business with all of their irrelevant curricula.
Yeah. John, you're 100% correct. It's ridiculous. When I was still on the Duluth campus, I political correctness was creeping in. I retired in 2006. And of course, I've become virtually full time doing conspiracy research and radio shows and creating videos and doing my best to get the truth out to the American people. I saw it was a major threat because it was constraining how you can express yourself and function as a barrier to critical thinking. And I'd spent 35 years offering courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning. I recognized it as a menace then, but it's gone full blown with our woke society and all the compromises taking place and the move to, on the basis of equity, to treat everyone the same. We always had this problem with social promotion in the past, where students who are lagging behind academically would nevertheless be promoted to stay with their social peers. But that was ridiculous. Now they're no longer even rewarding competence or achievement. They're actually going on about and moving students to degrees where they're abolishing standardized tests, claiming they're racially biased because blacks don't perform as well on them as whites. But there are all kinds of explanations for that, including innate average intelligence differences that are genetic and that require evolution to repair, but also that they're from lower socioeconomic status. They have a poor background, and it's well known to sociologists and students of education that these affect academic performance. They're trying to pretend those differences don't exist, and that it's only some bias in the system of education that causes them to perform poorly in comparison to whites or Asians today. And plus, in the criminal justice system, they adopt the same attitude. The overwhelming majority of crimes are committed in the United States by blacks, John. I mean, it's overwhelming. And that's why there's a greater proportion of blacks who are incarcerated. But from this liberal woke perspective, we're all performing crime at the same rate. And therefore, the higher proportion of blacks who are incarcerated is because of discrimination based on race. They're countering with discrimination based on race against whites. We now have massive anti-white racism being practiced by the Democrats, implemented by Soros-funded DAs, and upheld by woke judiciary. It is stunning and catastrophic.
Math is racist.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, you put your finger on a really key issue here.
Yeah, I wanted to get that out. And now Wolfgang was my champion when he said, "What do you mean there were no trauma helicopters at Sandy Hook?" Which is the first thing that should have happened if one student was shot.
Yeah.
And it went on from there where he was being harassed by the Connecticut State Police to tell him to keep his mouth shut. So what happened to him? He's been quiet now for a number of years.
Yeah, let me pick up on that. One second.
Yeah.
I know Wolfgang very well. I traveled to Newtown in 2014 with Wolfgang. He's not only a former Florida State Trooper, he's also a former U.S. Customs agent. Those are both very responsible positions. Okay. He has been a school administrator, and he's among the leading experts on school safety. Now, get this, John, you may or may not know, he got into this for the purest of reasons. He began sending FOIA requests and making phone calls to find out what happened, because he wanted to advise other school systems on what precautions they could take to make sure it didn't happen to them. And then, as you implied, he found two homicide detectives from the local precinct on his porch in a gated community in Florida telling him they were there on behalf of the Connecticut State Police. And if he didn't stop asking questions about Sandy Hook, he would be prosecuted. Well, this is about as absurd as you can do it, because Wolfgang has a tenacity of a bulldog. It did anything but turn him off. He pursued it relentlessly. He had court ordered hearings under oath, where the first select man of Newtown, that's a position equivalent to mayor, occupied by a woman by the name of Patricia LaLorda, testified under oath regarding the sign "Everyone Must Check In," that it had not been placed by the town, but by Homeland Security. And of course, that's extraordinary, because Homeland Security shouldn't have had anything to do with it. It was confirmation that, as I and my colleagues discovered, it was a FEMA drill, where FEMA is a branch of Homeland Security, where even one of the contributors to my book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, where I had 13 altogether, including six PhDs, Paul Preston, who himself is a school administrator and supervised active shooting drills, was so disillusioned by what he saw broadcast from Newtown that day that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him that it had been a drill, that no students had been harmed, and that it was done to promote gun control. You would think that would make it case closed, but John, they've gone massively. They've gone after Wolfgang. They've gone after me. They've gone after Alex. Can you imagine the absurdity of having a $1 billion fine for expressing an attitude? The whole point is to make the public believe you cannot question media-supported official narratives about these events, no matter how bizarre or incongruent they are with actual evidence. So Wolfgang was just to end about Wolfgang, bring you up to date, John. He was rousted out of his home like at 3 a.m. in the morning and marched through two fields so he'd look completely disheveled when they took his mugshot, on the basis of misdemeanor warrants that wouldn't have justified any such activity, that were wrongly utilized as though they were felony warrants. In other words, this is a gross abuse of a good man, Wolfgang Halbig.
They're still doing that to everybody. And that leads to the next question in sequence. And we're just skimming the surface of all of these events. I have to get in that I believe Adam Lanza never existed, but that's a subject for another time. I know your answer on this. This is maybe the most important question I'm asking. Why did they deprive you of a jury? And how has that, what bearing does that have on the Supreme Court denying your efforts to prove what you say is truthful?
Well, I was sued by Lenny Posner, who is a legal fiction. He's supposed to be the parent of Noah Posner, one of the kids. But as Wayne Carver explained during that press conference that James Tracy critiqued, he said how the parents were not allowed to come into contact with the children, that they were identified by photographs. And that made sense, because the children only existed in the form of photographs for virtually all of the children. There were one or two that were real kids, but even parents, it appears, were using photographs of themselves as children to be the fake Sandy Hook kids. Yeah. And what happened was, given in response to the lawsuit, I replied because I thought there would be an opportunity here to get all the evidence I'd amassed and published in the book Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which Amazon had banned less than a month after it went on sale, even though it had sold nearly 500 copies. So I enumerated a whole lot of the evidence I had proving that nobody died at Sandy Hook. And of course, if nobody died at Sandy Hook, then the assertions over which I was being sued that said that the death certificate, which had no file number, no state or town certification, was a fake. And by the way, I'm just describing the lawsuit. I'm enjoined by the court from reaffirming the sentences over which I was sued, which have been found to be defamatory. So this is all merely to explain the lawsuit, which otherwise is incoherent. On three different occasions, I had such sentences in the book and one in an independent blog. So I laid out all the evidence, including the FEMA manual, which I'd published in the book as Appendix A, the FBI Consolidated Crime Report for 2012, showing at the intersection of homicides or non-negligent manslaughters for Newtown in 2012, the number zero, how the official report on the shooting by the state's attorney, Stephen Sadinsky III, was a forensic failure because it did not create a causal nexus that tied the alleged shooter, Adam Lanza, to his victims and the weapons he's alleged to have used, that his fingerprints weren't on the .22 caliber rifle with which he's supposed to have shot his mother, and that of the 150 slugs they claimed to have recovered in the school, none of them could be matched to the weapon he's supposed to have used. They were, you know, AR-15 slugs, but they couldn't be said to come from his weapon specifically, so that it would have been absurd. You could not have convicted him of the crime in a court of law were it properly conducted. Now, get this. Already at the scheduling conference, the judge ruled that my views about whether or not Sandy Hook happened were not relevant to the accuracy or the truthfulness of the death certificate. Can you imagine? The death certificate says the decedent died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012 at the elementary school of multiple gunshot wounds. How could it not be relevant if I have a mass of evidence that nobody died? But the judge just set it aside. I would eventually learn that in Wisconsin, they have a summary judgment protocol that allows a judge to decide what evidence or facts are reasonable or not based upon his own subjective opinion. And if he does not believe the evidence or the facts are reasonable, he can set them aside as though they did not exist. John, this even extended to two forensic document experts who testified in support of my position. He just set them aside as well. And then the Wisconsin Court of Appeals upheld and in consecutive statements said, it is reasonable to believe Adam Lanza shot his mother, went to elementary, shot 20 kids, 6 adults, blah, blah, blah. It is unreasonable to believe it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. In others, the courts of Wisconsin, and I carried it to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which declined to review, accept my petition for review, all stood pat with a circuit court judge. I mean, it was outrageous. You could not have had a greater discrepancy, difference in the facts than I and the plaintiff in this case. And that means summary judgment is inapplicable. You can only have a summary judgment if there are no disputed facts. Well, the only way you got a summary judgment with no disputed facts is that the judge simply suppressed all of my evidence, all of my facts, to create a situation where there were no disputed facts by fiat, John. How bad is that? So I carried it all the way up to the Supreme Court. This was outrageous.
I have a friend going through the same thing on a real estate issue where the judge is just, he's submitted it 7 times. The judge is just completely ignoring it, and that's what they do. Well, one fact I wanted to bring out here, what's this judge's name and what was his background that made him the perfect guy to shut you down?
Well, his name was Remington, ironically, because, yeah. You know, we had the Remington lawsuit. where I sought to intervene, by the way, to contribute the point that there's never been a judicial determination that anybody died at Sandy Hook. There's been no such determination. And that it's all been done by stipulation or agreement or by default, as in the Alex Jones case.
Yes. Okay. That's what I wanted to get out of that. And I wanted to ask you, just as a general, the subjects you've tackled and that are all published on a series of books of Moonrock's books are really the defining issues of our time in terms of government corruption and keeping the public in the dark. What is the overarching lesson that you learn in each one of these traumatic processes that you wish to convey to the general public as a cautionary tale for their own future?
Listen, the overall arching is the lesson is that we're no longer a nation of law and order, that the judiciary has been politicized, and that, you know, what has in the past made the United States distinctive among nations is that we were a nation of law and order rather than a nation ruled by men. But with this degree of politicalization of the DOJ and the judiciary, that's no longer true. We are now a banana republic, John. We no longer have that trait that made us distinguished among all nations on planet Earth. We ain't that country any longer.
I reflected that about Joe Biden. First of all, I disagree that we had an honest election that ousted Trump from office. But everything Joe Biden has done has been at odds with the right decision that a normal president, if there were, ever was such a thing, would have done for the welfare of his country. Biden has done exactly the opposite. We have no law enforcement operation, law enforcement apparatus in the country, because they don't prosecute crimes. They only prosecute innocent people who are trying to defend the principles of a republic. And this has been completely reversed. And the most disturbing fact about this is that the public, gulled into believing all these things by a totally corrupt Israeli media, has gone along with it. So the American people are accessories to the destruction of their own country, and probably, if we get World War III like Biden wants, of the whole world.
Yeah, you're right in a broad sense, except the American people don't know what's going on because of the control of the media by the Zionist brigade. So you're 100% correct about it. But it's hard to hold the American people culpable. The theft of the election of 2020 and of 2022 was unprecedented, John. More massive on a scale and never before seen, even in the United States. So I agree 100%, and I've reported upon it again and again and again.
So what should ordinary people, ordinary observers like me — I'm just an ordinary observer — what should we do to try to reverse this trend? It seems like there's no way to do it without putting ourselves at risk, since the January 6th fiasco has shown that if we try to be patriotic and defend the Republican principles of the country, we're going to be thrown in jail and accused of insurrection. So what are we to do?
Yeah, John, that's a $64,000 question, as JFK observed. Those who make peaceful reform impossible make violent revolution inevitable. I wish I could tell you we're not heading in that direction, but all the evidence suggests that may be where this ends up, because the Democrats, through their control of the apparatus for elections, are stealing one election after another. What was wonderful about the American system of government enshrined in the Constitution is a potential for reform, periodic election, recall, impeachment, blah, blah. So you can reset the agenda if the ship of state is headed in the right direction. We had massive polling on the order of 80-85% that American voters believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. That's normally a weather vane as to how a midterm will turn out. And it would have been a massive red wave what for the manipulation of the outcome by the Democrats, who are destroying the United States in order to retain their own political control. And as long as you have a politicized Department of Justice headed by a zealot like Merrick Garland, who has no respect for the Constitution or the administration of the law in an objective fashion, but is a political zealot for the Democrats, we're in terrible shape, John. I mean, I wish I could give you a more positive outcome, but I think JFK got it right.
Yeah, he did. We're in a situation where people who are genuinely patriotic are at risk because they run counter to the Democrats / bankers / Jews desire to eliminate all independent countries on the planet, eliminate all cash, which means eliminating all freedom. And we're headed down that road. We're very far down that road, and that we need a radical solution to reverse it. And I don't see anybody, certainly not anybody in government, coming up with that assessment of the situation. They're all going along with it, as are most of the American people, preferring to remain asleep, preferring to defend the very inoculations that are killing them. And there's no good way out of this. And I think that my philosophy has been, what do you do when you know somebody is trying to kill you?
Yes, yes. And I think, by the way, this is part and parcel of the fact that Kevin McCarthy isn't just sailing into the speakership. There's a group of 20 Republicans who think we are not doing enough, that the Republican Party is failing the American people and they're holding out. And right now, I'd say in terms of the short term, they are our greatest hope. Carrie Lake is going to carry on her case with funding from Mike Lindell, who has been a great patriot, in my opinion. Carrie Lake is our Joan of Arc. I think that case has a potential to expose the shenanigans across the board. And she was dealt with very badly in the court here on her first round with the appeal. We're going to open the lines for callers, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, to speak to John Kaminsky and me. Stand by. We'll be right back. Well, we'll see if any callers are coming in at 540-352-4452. Among the latest reports, the Polish Army has ordered 70,000 new carbines. That's going to be quite significant. Indication as to what's going on there, because Poland wants to get involved in this event. And I think it's going to be greatly to their detriment. I just had a report about BlackRock wanting to buy up Ukraine, basically, that Zelensky is worried because these Iranian-made drones only cost about $30,000 apiece, while the Patriot missiles, depending on which model, run anywhere from $3 to $6 million apiece. So they're being exhausted, you know, financially and in other ways. But those who want to carve up Ukraine are going to meet, you know, implacable resistance from Russia, which cannot allow that to happen. This suggests that the events in Ukraine are going to go on apace, where there is no off-ramp, but the key feature is Russia has the ability to defend itself. John, your thoughts?
I hate to turn this into a Polish joke, but I wonder if Poland remembered to order any ammunition along with those rifles.
I like that. I like that.
I'm Polish, being Polish myself, or perhaps I'm Ukrainian because I'm from Galicia, the border area there, or my ancestors are. I'm not. Poland has shown its true colors at the start of the Second World War, and they're showing their true colors again as a totally untrustworthy country at the beginning of World War III.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, Russia has been very kind and gentle to Ukraine. I believe Putin wanted to preserve the infrastructure, didn't want civilians to die needlessly when they came in to communities, and they gave them food rations. The Ukrainians would come in after the Russians pulled out and slaughter them all, especially the Azov battalion, which is not just a neo-Nazi outfit, but a Nazi outfit. Actually, it may be insulting to the Nazis because they're as brutal as they come, John. This is absolutely stunning stuff, what's going on here. I'd like to give my producer, who has keen interest in all these events, Mitchell, an opportunity to exchange conversation with John Kaminsky. Mitchell, please join the conversation.
Hi, Mitchell.
Mitchell, are you there? We may have been cut off. There's something that happened to my recording now. I was recording the show, of course. And, the network records at Revolution Radio automatically. But I'm not seeing. Mitchell, can you join? John, go ahead.
One thing I wanted to say while we're waiting for Mitchell is the Ukraine has the same problem that the United States has. It's owned and operated by a foreign power. And that power is the same, and we know who it is. And whether Russia is also in this boat or not, I don't know, because it seems like Israel has tilted against Russia by increasing its efforts to fund what's going on in Ukraine. And so they may be resentful. I mean, you wouldn't think so, because Putin is in the is totally in the hands of Kabod. And it's like, the Jewish philosophy over time has been to support all kinds of conflict and fund both sides of each struggle, and thereby profit from the victor, no matter how much it costs the loser. And we see down through history, as far back as you want to go, this is what they do, and this is what they're doing now. They're not, I mean, we abandon our, we meaning the United States, we abandon our efforts in Afghanistan at great cost, to $82 billion to the American taxpayer. That was the money of Americans paid to defend their own country that Joe Biden just threw away in Afghanistan and allowed the Chinese to get hold of most of it. And it's like the Jews have profited from that. They have gained concessions from China, which appears to be in the deep distress itself. But it's like all these countries are owned by the Jewish bankers who control their money, and they are manipulating this war. They are the ones who want this war. They are the ones who produce the vaccine that has killed, Todd Callender says, 20 million people. David Martin says it's going to be 100 million by 2025. And we just lost the Buffalo Bills defensive back to the vaccine the other night. And this is all the work of Jews, of Israelis, who own the pharmaceutical companies, who have admitted before that Dutch senator, when he asked that fateful question, did you test the vaccine to see if it would reduce transmission? And she said, oh, no, of course we didn't. We were operating at the speed of science. So that rendered the whole COVID fiasco a hoax. And it was propped up by corrupt politicians like Trudeau in Canada and like that lady in New Zealand, Jacinda. And it's like, these people have all been paid off to kill their own citizens, and it's about time the citizens return the favor.
Here, by the way, is another report of a 17-year-old basketball player dies suddenly at home. I mean, I guarantee you, these are all vaxxed as. John Stockton is reporting, you know, thousands of athletes dying is just not getting any publicity. I think Mitchell may be able to join us now. Mitchell, can you join the conversation with John Kaminsky and me, please?
Hey, hi, Jim. Hi, John. How y'all doing?
Hi, Mitchell. Welcome.
The amount of cognitive dissonance that it takes for, you know, for someone to literally say, I'm going to get a vaccine, and I can go, everything can go back to normal, and then they still get sick. And they need more vaccine, and they still get sick. There is a serious disconnect between reality and what people are doing. And it just shows that the psychological operations by governments and agencies have really done a job people are just so susceptible to suggestion from what they perceive to be an authority that they blindly follow it without question.
Media-induced brain damage. Yes, we've lost the ability. This is really a complex thing. It actually goes back to the invention of the electric light. We've lost the ability to assist in our own survival, to develop strategies for new threats. We're totally powerless against them because we've turned over the operation of our lives to the systems that control us, notably money, but reliable, being reliable on electricity, being reliable on being part of the crowd. And it's like we can't make our own decisions anymore, except if you really make up your mind that you're not going to be cowed by the opprobrium, the opposition of the people who can't think for themselves. I have a whole family like that. I've had to abandon them all. They all voted for Biden and they've all been jabbed.
You're going to love this story. Republican Jewish coalition head slams GOP infidels voting against McCarthy, threatens consequences. Infidels? That's making it out to be a religious or a theological dispute when it's pure politics. I think the infidels in this case are in the right. But it sure suggests that they want McCarthy in there to maintain the status quo and the political power of the Zionist lobby, which virtually controls the entire Congress of the United States. We've had two callers join us. The first, Paul from California. Paul, join the conversation with me and John Kaminsky.
You know, I thought
Paul.
The best line. Hey, I thought the best line from the first hour was when John said, I believe something like it was his honor or pleasure to be basking in your reflected glory. Was that how that went, John?
That's a famous phrase by somebody. I forget who.
I got to remember to start using that when I get.
Yeah.
When I take the professor on, as I frequently do. So Jim, listen to your guest. You introduced him as a brilliant guy, right? And you don't hear your guest going on about, Trump fixed the economy. Trump made us energy independent. Trump helped shut down the border. Trump did this. Trump did that. You don't hear him saying that. And of course, the reason is it's really not true. He doesn't have the power to do any of those things. And here's the fact of the matter is that he's precisely right on in terms of not being that interested in the technicalities of 9/11. Now, we all know them. I agree with you mostly on your analysis of the technicalities. I've been on board most of the time. But he's precisely correct in talking about it's who is behind it, right? Name the Jew, name the Jew, name the Jew. And all Trump did was basically appoint every Jew in sight that he could into the government to help him. And of course, you know, significant among them was Wilbur Ross, who is well known to have assisted in, you know, procuring the assistance of the Rothschilds in bailing out, his businesses. So, you know, look, John Kaminsky or Jim Fetzer or me or Dave Scorpio or Giuseppe or any number of other people that you know, Jim, would never go to the Wailing Wall, put on the little beanie and bob back and forth and maybe even kiss it. I don't know if Trump's lips actually touched the Wailing Wall, but it doesn't matter because there's photos of him there with the little beanie on, performing his duty to his masters. So I want you to get Trump out of your mind, if you could, once and for all. Just flush him down the toilet the way the deep state has and the way the Jews have. And if he runs again and there's rumors he's going to form a third party, just think how successful all the third party candidates have been throughout history and ask yourself, does Trump know this? Should he know this? The answer is yes. He will more than likely ensure that a Democrat is elected, even though they'll probably steal it one way or the other. But even if they don't, the bottom line is Trump is not going anywhere politically anymore. All right. Thanks for letting me rant, Jim.
Yeah, I always welcome your rants, Paul. You add a lot of diversity to the show. Whether or not I'm going to, you know, bend to your wishes, as it were, is a whole other matter. We have Scott from San Diego here. Scott, join the conversation with Paul, John Kaminsky, and me. Scott.
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jim. Yeah, you were talking earlier about the vaccine, you know. It's been my opinion for many years that the only reason that there's a flu season is because that's when the vaccine comes out.
Yeah.
They are created at the same time. The vaccines and the flu are created at the same time by the CDC.
No, I'm sure what I'm saying is the vaccine causes the outbreak. Because what you got is you got people that go and get the shot and they get sick anyway. And actually, the shot makes you sick. 9 times out of 10, what does somebody say? Oh, I got the shot and I got sick. So what happens is, what they don't get sick enough to stay home, and they feel better, well enough to go out about. So what they're doing is they're shedding, and they're spreading the virus.
Well,
you see what I'm saying?
As John mentioned early on, they didn't even test for its inhibition of transmission. In other words, we were sold a bag of garbage about the vax from the beginning. And of course, they had done enough tests to know it was killing people right and left. It was making women have spontaneous abortions. It was inducing infertility and sterility, which were exactly the objectives they wanted to achieve. John.
Well, I want to go back to Paul. I didn't get a chance to answer him. I completely agree with Paul that Trump is irrelevant. He's always been irrelevant. However, there is no candidate put forth as realistic who is not under the sway of the international Jewish bankers. None. I would like to think Thomas Massie might be, but I plugged him too many times, so I don't really know. But we are completely lost as a society because the power of the media has attached itself to all the minds. These stories that the New York Times put out earlier in the year about the Revolutionary War meant to enslave blacks and all of the other deliberately false stories they put forth that the American people now believe have rendered not only any candidate free of the Jews to emerge, but anybody in the American electorate to vote for a candidate who was not approved by the Jews. I mean, the trance has advanced that far so that there's just a small percentage of people like us that I would say are still less than 10% of the American population who are capable of electing a candidate who could free us from this Jewish tyranny that has been had us locked down at least since 1913 when they took control of the money supply. The first thing that has to happen to free us from that is we have to be freed from the Federal Reserve. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If that doesn't happen, we're not going to be free, and Klaus Schwab is going to get his wish, and we're going to lose our freedom completely when they go to completely plastic money. That'll be the end of it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I second that, and I would add at least one other and probably two other legs to that Federal Reserve stool. And the second leg, of course, would be the media. We cannot allow these people to continue to control the public mind, and that's what they've done now for at least 100 or more years. Henry Ford pointed it out. That's why he had to form his own newspaper to publish his own articles. And the fact of the matter is that is, in my opinion, besides the money, that is the most powerful and corrosive influence on the public mind. Nobody would believe so much of this Jew nonsense. And that's really what they give us all the time. They give us complete blather and drivel, whether it's politics or medicine, and in many cases, even so-called science. They completely lie to us and deceive us constantly. And we're nothing but victims to their informational tyranny, and that has to end. Period.
My television has been in the closet for about 3 years now, And I get my football news on YouTube because I can watch a game in like 10 minutes. And that's how I've cured my that's how I've cured my addiction to that. But it's like until we're free of all of these really obscene entertainments that they inveigle us with, we're not going to have the intellectual capacity to understand how we're being deceived and what we have to do to avoid it.
Scott, you want to add some thoughts? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go, Scott.
Yeah, I really, you know, I'm just disillusioned with the whole government system. It's amazing how these people have gotten us to believe that our system is so fragile that, you know, anything can upset the balance. You know, if you don't elect this person, and everything will fall apart. People have managed to make themselves more important in our lives than they really should be.
True.
And then I'll add to that, Scott, since you mentioned the government and politics, as I've made this point many, many times on the air, the whole system is designed to deliberately thwart the will of the people. Okay. Yep. We don't have any influence at all, and especially our vote. And as long as these people have these bureaucracies and corporations set up to get in our way, right, as well as the judiciary, I never tire of mentioning out here in California Proposition 87 that was passed with nearly 65% of the vote. And if you do the math on that, right, 65 and 35, it's nearly double, okay? So 65% of the people in California voted to deny public benefits to illegal aliens, and one single female Jewish judge reversed that. So what kind of system is that we're under, that we're supposed to pay attention to a governor or a legislature or anything else? It's all ridiculous Jewish blather.
Jim, I think you have the answer to that.
Namely, you mean JFK's observation? I mean, you know, I want Paul to tell us. I think Paul believes we have to go to the mattresses, if I read him right. Paul.
Well, look at what happened to you, Jim. I mean, look at what happened to you in our court system, okay? When you said on the air, I don't know how long ago it was now, maybe 2 years or something, when you said truth is the ultimate defense, I remember shaking my head and going, oh, boy, poor Jim's going to find out the hard way.
Yes,
we live in a world of lies. I mean, this is the one thing John Kaminsky and so many others have done throughout their quote-unquote career, pointing out the fact that everything that we see is essentially a construct by our Jewish masters. Let's face it. I mean, they're on top. Okay, they won World War II. They've won all the financial wars. They win all the media and the information war. They got people to line up. I saw the lines myself. They got people to line up to get a test for a non-existent virus, and they got people to line up to get a shot that they never tested, and that you know and I know they had planned for years to inject people with poison. They got people waiting in line and happy to do it. So this is, you know, this is only going to end one way, in my opinion. I've been saying that for a long time.
And well, just the very name of government. I mean, what is to govern? It means to retard, to slow down, to hold back.
Yep, well said.
And that's all they do.
Mitchell, you're welcome to join in again, by the way, my friend. I think Brian probably agrees with Paul Scott probably agrees with Paul about the solution, that we don't have a real one, that we're forced to take up arms to overthrow the tyranny that has enveloped us. Is that your stance, Scott?
Well, that's a catch-22 because it's exactly what they want.
So what is your take on what can be done?
I think we're fucked either way.
Okay. Yeah, well, so you know what, then comes the old saying about you know, standing on your feet versus on your knees, right? We all know that saying, right? I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees, or something like that. So I mean, if we're screwed either way, then what the heck, right? But, you know, most people are going to choose comfort, right, and perceived safety. And as long as they keep just enough food in the stores, right, and just enough entertainment on the television, and just enough paycheck to get you by, this is their formula, and they're going to continue this for a long time. I really do think that, you know, these notions they keep floating about the economic collapse and the food crisis and the shortages, I think that's a lot of fear propaganda. I'm not saying that there aren't going to be degrees of it, but I think they very well know that bad things happen when things get really bad, and bad things happens to them. They know history as well as we do. So this is the insidiousness of these people. They know not to let things get too bad, because the internet has raised a lot of awareness about who these people are.
John,
these people?
Paul's not reluctant to identify them, all right? So, yeah.
These people, we know who they are. And my solution, I first advocated in 2014, was we need to go in and tear them out of their offices and tear their limbs off. And we wouldn't have to do it to too many people before people would start resigning and confessing.
Tell us what you really think, John.
I think there's no alternative to that. There never has been.
I agree, and as long as a volcano is involved somehow, then I'd be happy.
A volcano. Scott, you have a further thought that I want Mitchell to come back in. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Scott dropped a second ago, Jim.
Okay, well, Mitchell,
as tough as a stand as it is right now, it's going to be even tougher later, because they're consolidating power.
The longer we wait.
Yeah. So, you know.
It should have happened a long time ago. It should have happened after 9/11. Yeah. And everybody backed off.
Well, that's why I believe a third party is the only answer to just driving home, split the party system. You can't join the monopoly. That's what Trump did.
It's not going to work. It has to be a Hitler-type dictatorship. Somebody's got to take the lead, enforce the law. Everybody's going to endorse it, get on the same page, and pull together and take the money away from the Jews. That's the first step. Don't ask me how to do it. I can't keep any money myself at all.
Hey, John, I can't thank you enough. Mitchell, Paul, thank you for calling in. Scott, too. We've run out of time, but John, it's just been a great pleasure having you here, my friend. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, guys. That was great, too.
Thanks, Jeff.